Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts spends approximately 60% of the day in a prone position. The other host is a dog. He's probably at 80%, just waiting for a belly rub. Joined today by a person who is rarely in a prone position because he's so busy being on every ESPN show. That is Field Yates. Welcome, Field.
What is up, Mina? First of all, a couple of things. The intro music is never not jarring listening to your podcast, right? You know, it's like, you know it's coming, and it still kind of gets you, which I love. And your intro was so classic that I was stepping, like, I thought you were going to tee up a line, and I was going to come over the top with a great joke. Instead, you made one even funnier than what I had in mind. So thank you for being the comedy genius
now
that you are.
I have to know what the joke you had in mind was. You can't just say
that. I was saying, you know, one of us spends 60, or the only podcast where one of the hosts spends 60% of his or her time in a prone position. And I was going to say, like, clearly you're not aware of my daily activity as a member of the Fantasy Focus Football podcast. But your delivery, as usual, much better than mine.
I know you hit the gym. I've seen the grams. I know all about your very active lifestyle and your modeling. We'll get to that later. So for those who don't know, Field is on shows like NFL Live. He's one of the co-hosts of the extremely popular Fantasy Focus Football podcast. But before we get into it, I want to ask him a question that I feel like everyone has, but nobody has had the courage who watches ESPN to ask it. But on the Mina Kimes Show, we go places that other podcasts are afraid to go. What is your skincare regimen? Because you glow.
Wow. That's a very important question. I've actually been waiting my entire life for somebody to ask that question. You know something, Mina? I don't use any skin product whatsoever, which is sort of a, you know, no, it's true. You know something? I don't have any idea if this contributes to it, but my dad, born and raised in Hawaii, and very simplistic man, and like he felt like, and he traces this back to like his heritage. Like, my dad didn't take Advil until he was like 55 years old. Like, his like sometimes his neglect for like regular modern medicine like may have actually been to his detriment. But like, so he was always like, you know, growing up, it was never like, I don't think I put suntan lotion on or whatever you want to call it, sunspray, until like a much at least that I can remember. So my dad went all natural. So I was like, I got to follow this man's lead. And so I'm not a big skin, I'm not a big skincare regimen person. I should probably be better about that because I think there's probably long-term benefit. But like, yeah. I'm probably going to be the guy that goes from, like, you know, running backs hit the cliff and they just fall off. And all of a sudden they go from a 1,000-yard rusher to like a 220-yard rusher. So like, I'm going to show up one football season and I'm going to have bags under my eyes and probably super wrinkly.
I mean, just so much shocking new information there. No one that your dad was from Hawaii. I assumed you were born in an L.L. Bean, but wow. I mean, just processing all
Rain
this.
Rain Spooner catalog in Hawaii. Rain Spooner.
Listen, we got a couple good games today that I want to talk about. Vikings, Seahawks, and Rams, Bears. Don't know if you saw the video of Mitch Trubisky playing ping pong. Hopefully that bears well. Bears, get it? Well, for his activity in that game. But before we get to those games, Field, I wanted to get into what's arguably the biggest NFL news of the week, which is the firing of Packers head coach Mike McCarthy. And also, I want to generally talk a little bit about the coaching carousel and some of the firings that are no doubt looming around the corner. But with McCarthy, the latest in this saga and his surprising firing, and I say surprise, not to refer to him being fired, but the timing of it, clearly he didn't see it coming. Last night, or maybe yesterday at some point, one would assume this kind of tweet was sent at night, but you never know. Packers, I think his title is assistant heads coach, right? He's a linebackers coach. Winston yep. Moss tweeted, I'm just going to read the whole thing. Ponder this. What championship teams no offense, Winston, but I'm just reading it literally, great leadership, period. It is not the offensive guru trend. It is not the safe trend. Find somebody that is going to hold number 12 and everybody in this building to a hashtag Lombardi standard, period, hashtag losing sucks. Reader, he was fired. So other than the obvious takeaway that you should never tweet, what does this tell you about sort of maybe why the McCarthy, and maybe it doesn't tell you anything, I think it does, about why the McCarthy era ended so abruptly, and do you think it impacts the coaching search situation and search in Green Bay at all?
So I guess there's a couple of ways to interpret that tweet from Winston Moss, who I figured you'd allude to him as former Seahawks great Winston Moss. It's possible some of our listeners might recall Winston from his playing days. He had a somewhat decent NFL career. And obviously that contributes to your coaching career as well. But I would say this, there are two ways to interpret it. One would be, hey, we need to find someone who's going to hold Aaron Rodgers accountable so as to say that Mike McCarthy was not holding him accountable. Or conversely, my other way of reading it would be that, hey, you can't let the quarterback run the show. You need to find a head coach who has enough fortitude that he is willing to, you know, make Aaron Rodgers understand that, like, this is my ship, my show, and you are a part of it. Obviously, you are the most important part of it, and probably no matter who the Packers hire, Aaron Rodgers' play will contribute more to the team's success in the imminent future than the long-term future. But I think there's something to be said for, like, hey, as much as we're sort of assigning the idea Packers need to hire somebody who is a perfect fit for Aaron Rodgers, maybe there's a school of thought that they need to hire somebody who's the perfect fit for the Packers as a whole and not be so narrow-minded as to only focus on what's best for number 12.
Well, I don't think anyone agrees also about what the perfect fit for Aaron Rodgers is exactly, right? Like, so when he refers to the offensive guru thing, I think he's talking, he didn't hashtag that, did he? No, he did not. He's talking about sort of, I think, the rumors of the Lincoln Rileys and the Cliff Kingsburys and the, well, that's out the window now, but the, everybody wants a Sean McVay kind of vibe, which I, first of all, I take a lot of issue with that because people seem to have forgotten that Sean McVay coached in the NFL for several years. Like, he wasn't plucked from college. He wasn't plucked from nowhere. He's a very different case called plays. But I've wondered if that, when people say, okay, that's what they need, is that even what's best for Aaron Rodgers? I don't know if you saw James Jones, his former teammate, was on, I believe, NFL Network, and he had said he talked to Aaron, and Aaron was kind of vague about what he wanted, but that he thought, actually, they would be better off going with a defensive-minded coach, right? And that makes me think of, like, well, what if the Packers had, like, a Vic Fangio or some kind of defensive guru? Maybe that would be better. And then having a young guy as a play caller, I don't really know what's best. We know that the offense, well, we don't know. I believe that the offense had grown a little bit stale. I think maybe not as terrible as some people have stated. It's been a little bit overstated, but obviously they would benefit from a fresh injection, I think, of offensive thinking. Does that have to be at the head coach position, though?
No, and I think we are all collectively prisoners of the moment, right? Like, that's just how a lot of our minds operate. And so right now, the two best recent head coaching hires that people are trying to emulate going forward are Sean McVay, as you alluded to, and I would say Matt Nagy with the Bears. And the Bears have obviously escalated dramatically in terms of offensive production this year. They're fifth in scoring or top five in scoring on offense, and I want to say top five in terms of scoring on defense as well. So, but that's a really balanced effort there in Chicago. So it's not merely like, hey, you hire a really great offensive mind as your head coach and you turn things around for immediate success. Because if you look at other teams that have made defensive coaching hires, like, it does not preclude you from becoming really good on offense. And we have to go a few years further back. But, like, for example, I think about Atlanta. They're having their massive struggles this year. But the Falcons obviously had a Super Bowl, like, firmly in their grasp until they didn't. But you know my point. My point is that the Falcons would have won that game or should have won that game because of their offense. And what we learned from that head coach hire of Dan Quinn, a defensive-minded coach, is that, like, he did a great job of finding an offensive coordinator in then Kyle Shanahan to operate the ship from there going forward. So I don't know when we got to the idea that the only way the only coaches a league is identifying right now are young offensive minds. Like, I get it. I understand that sentiment based off of the dramatic turnarounds we've seen in Los Angeles and Chicago. But in the same way that the Cowboys Saints game last week was a bit of a reminder that, like, there are multiple ways to skin the cat and still win in the NFL, I think there are other head coaching hires that would make sense in Green Bay. And this stuff is sort of difficult to evaluate from the outside, but, like, you have to look at the people who are making the hires as well. Mm-hmm. And Mark Murphy has only ever known the Packers way, right? And I don't know what his openness is to thinking outside the box, thinking way outside the box. Like, the Packers were lauded for thinking a little bit outside the box in their GM hire, and they hired somebody in their own building, Mina. Like, it's not like they went out of their own, like, They literally hire Brian Gutekunst, who'd been there for whatever 12 years after some time in Kansas City. So this is a team that does things in a very, for lack of a better word, traditional way. Funny you mentioned Fangio, actually. When we do our weekly insider roundtable, which you and I are a part of, that goes up on ESPN.com each week, and it's like five questions. My first, I had written my paragraph about why Vic Fangio makes sense, and I just spent more time and talked myself out of Vic. Maybe I should have just like held my ground there, because like what is he do? Like what he's doing in Chicago defensively is, you know, it's I don't say it's every bit as impressive as what Sean McVay or Matt Nagy has done. I'm not sure that's the case, but it's at least in the same neighborhood in terms of output for a defense that is really kicking tail when it's difficult to play good defense in the NFL now.
Right. It's the funny thing about the Packers. Well, not funny if you're a Packers fan, but we spend so much time talking about, you know, how bad is McCarthy and how much worse is Aaron Rodgers this year, when in fact, according to Football Outsiders, their offense is 7th in DVOA. Their defense is 23rd, but we talk about that far less. I think one concern right now that teams might have with going that route field, with having the defensive head coach and, you know, like a young offensive hotshot, is the fear that you'll lose him immediately. I think about like Tennessee, where that's kind of like what they have, right? Where Mike Vrabel came in and he hired Matt LaFleur from Los Angeles, and they haven't been as, I mean, who the heck knows who the Titans are, by the way? Like, anyone who says they know what that team is and if they're going to win any given week is absolutely lying to myself included. But if they had been super successful, if they had, you know, created a sort of Bears lift, if Matt LaFleur had come in and been just super, super, super good from the top, I do think his name would be in the mix for head coaching hires this year, just based on way things are gone. So I do feel like part of the reason teams want the offensive guy to be the head coach, to be the play caller, to be your, to have your Kyle Shanahan or whatever type, is that it does reduce a little bit of that turnover maybe. But again, who knows if that's going to be the case in a few years. Like we make these assumptions, and you talked about Cowboys Saints, about where the NFL is going and how nothing's going to change. And guess what? That it changes every 2 years. So I don't think there's any way of knowing exactly what it's going to look like.
Isn't that kind of the point here too, is that like we need to operate under the premise that like we as the collective public, and I think NFL teams as well, like, there's a lot of evidence that we're not very good at identifying quality head coaching candidates. I mean, if you look at I think it's kind of obvious when you point to how many coaches in the NFL have been with their current teams for more than 5 years, heck, even more than 4 years. Like the league turns over nearly 25% of its head coaches every single year. So I don't know, and this, it's not that football is so different from basketball or hockey or baseball in this regard, but like we sit here as if we have these coaches that are, you know, guarantees to upgrade the franchise, you know, in a measurable way. And yet not even a year into some of these coaches' tenures, people are saying, like, is it time to fire them? Vance Joseph literally almost got fired after 1 year in Denver last year. Like, John Elway had to release a statement saying he was keeping Vance Joseph. I'm like, if the standard of success is as high as it is right now in the NFL, like, we need to understand that, like, yeah, we're going to identify some people that we think are quality head coaching candidates, but the reality is, like, there's a pretty good shot that we're going to entirely miss the boat because we've got, like, four coaches that have been around for more than like 7 or 8 years in the NFL.
Yeah, it's like quarterbacks, right? Like we don't really, really know.
We have no idea.
Listen, before we get out of the, you know, you mentioned Vance Joseph. Obviously, despite the Broncos' recent success, although they just lost wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders today to an Achilles injury, which is terrible because beside their recent success, I do think he's still on the hot seat. You know, his seat has cooled off a little bit. He can put, you know, you put one cheek down, but it's still hot. You know, same, I think, with applies to like a Dirk Cutter. There's the same names that have been there for a few weeks are still in the mix. One name that was introduced, and I just want to get your take on this. I don't really buy the notion that he's going to get fired, but there was a story last week about Panthers owner David Tepper being, quote, it was, I think, by Jason LaCanfora and CBS, being concerned about the lack of analytics in the Panthers. Obviously, they've had a losing streak, and there have been a couple of firings of assistants. Do you think there's any chance that Ron Rivera, his job is at risk?
I do. I mean, first of all, nothing surprises me in the NFL anymore when it comes to coaches, right? I don't know how many coaches are truly, utterly, entirely, you know, like, safe going into this offseason. Obviously, there are, like, probably 10 or 12 or 15. But my point is that there are a lot of guys that have, like, there's going to be at least one surprise this offseason, as there almost always is in the NFL. But Ron Rivera, so there are a couple of warning flags. First of all, and this is kind of like a lame cliche, but like when a new owner or new GM takes over, like automatically everybody is kind of on the hot seat, right? Because yes. If you're not one of their guys, it's a problem. But, you know, David Tepper has roots as being a part of the Steelers organization, which would suggest to you that he would buy into the idea of organizational stability, right? That's sort of the pinnacles of what's one of the hallmarks of what the Steelers have done. At the same time, like, we've also seen that when people sort of fly the nest or get away, like, what they want to do is take tidbits of what they learn and then also apply their own beliefs. So nothing would surprise me. Carolina has had a crater month, or they had the November was very unkind to them. But like, if you're evaluating like what has led to these four games, because I've had a hard time pinpointing what it is, like, I don't know that it's like some coaching error. I look at it as like they still really can't stop anybody in the back end. They haven't generated as much pass rush as you probably need consistently. And the offense puts up points, but it's missing like a couple of key ingredients. And like, that's probably, I'm not saying it's GM Marty Herney that needs to be on the hot seat, but I look at it as more like, you know, the Panthers are just a couple of ingredients away.
This is a defense that got old. I mean, I you know, there's really no, and also in addition to getting old, they've lost some coaching on the defensive side, you know, some brain power there. Sean McDermott went to Buffalo, you might remember. Right now, Eric Washington's defensive coordinator. Ron Rivera is a defensive guy. So if there was one case to be made for him being on the hot seat, it might be that the defense has fallen off, but I do believe it's more talent driven than anything. So I feel the same way. He shouldn't be blamed, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that I understand why coaches are often the first people to go, but I rarely am an advocate for pulling the plug super soon on guys. And I know Rivera's had some time, but like in the David Tepper era, which is what, like 5 or 6 months old, I would hope that he would preach a bit more patience.
All right, so you'll have to be patient if you want to hear about the games, because first we're going to do the segment we skipped last week because we had a couple of guests. Let's hear it.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right, Field. So I always take a few questions from listeners. Anyone who leaves a nice review and asks me a question, I will try to get to it eventually. First one is from Dusty1982. How many first-round picks would you be okay with trading Michael Dixon to the Niners? Wow.
Oh, man.
A Sophie's choice.
So, you first. I mean, but I do have a thought. I do have a thought after this.
Oh, my beloved. I believe he still leads the NFL in net punting, right? Is what they call it, net yards, where they take account for returns. He's the best thing that's happened to me in a really long time. One first-round draft pick.
One first-round pick is all you need, huh? All right. I'm gonna go with two. And
stop,
the reason why two. I need, listen, I'm loyal to my Aussie punters, all right? Like, that's just how I operate in my life. But there was a time earlier this season, and obviously things have changed dramatically, but really early on in the season where I thought to myself, my favorite offensive player on the Seahawks is Michael Dixon. And it might
which
still be true.
Which is more of a reflection on the sadness of the Seahawks offense than anything.
Yeah. But, you know, hey, I don't need to tell you this, and I know that I don't need to tell Seahawks Twitter this, but sometimes I think that even the most incredible and accomplished athletes or coaches or managers in sports are underappreciated. I think we might be underappreciating Russell Wilson.
We'll get to that on Seahawks Twitter,
but I think so.
We're gonna talk about the CX Vikings tonight. Please take all the time in the world you need to talk about how great Russell is. I can't wait. Next question is from Kill Rice, who pointed out, and I don't know why I'm taking his question after reading it. He said there's too much dog talk on this podcast, which, wow. I mean, okay. Would you rather cold open SportsCenter with a 10-minute monologue or ziplining? So for those who don't know, I gave some takes while ziplining through the Mall of America in Minneapolis last year. obviously, I would like to preserve some semblance of dignity and a career and do the monologue, I think. But that said, I'll probably do something else stupid at the Super Bowl this year. Lone Wolf DTLA, this is kind of a response to the last question in some ways, says he has a schnauzer poodle mix named Rocky, trying to make Football Sundays our weekly thing, but he seems uninterested, and he blames the ineptitude of the Packers' offense. I feel you. So you got to get your dog into the game or, you know, hyped up for Football Sundays by making the sofa a place he wants to be on Sundays, making it extra cozy, giving him a treat. My dog, listen, he does not care about what's happening on the TV, but he picks up on my emotions. He's super intuitive. I've told this story before, but after the Seahawks lost to the Patriots in the Super Bowl, when I came home, my dog, it was like those dogs that are trained to respond to emergencies. Like, he instantly knew that mom was in a very bad mental state, and he cuddled with me for 48 hours, basically.
Dogs know. They just
they
know.
Just know. They
everything.
Just know. Append, oh, Apton in TX, or ATX, asks, who will have more yards from scrimmage over the course of his career, Saquon Barkley or Dalvin Cook? Oh, it's Saquon. Pay the whales. We'll talk about Dalvin Cook later on when we talk about Seahawks Vikings. Last question. Pay the whales asks, what's the third best sandwich of all time? Third best. I'm going to go with grilled cheese. I lost my first tooth in a grilled cheese sandwich. I remember it like it was yesterday. It's because my mom has this like weird way of making grilled cheese sandwiches super hard. Like, they're not.
I was going to say, do they go crispy?
They're like kind of chewy. My mom's Korean, and growing up, she made a lot of American foods, but like in weird ways. Like, what I thought was pizza was not pizza, or what I thought was a grilled cheese sandwich was very different from what most people had as grilled cheese sandwiches. Doesn't mean they were delicious for sure, but her grilled cheese was pretty strange. All right.
I feel like it's hard to mess up a grilled cheese, but out of deference and respect to your mother, I'm gonna leave it right there.
Getting a tooth lost in one is a pretty good way to mess one up. I want to talk. So, Field, I have been waiting for this game for a while because in my mind, I thought it was going to be the true test of like an offense versus a good defense in 2018. And then Saints Cowboys kind of stole its thunder for me, but I'm still very excited about it. So, Jay?
Rams at Bears.
Do you think this is still kind of the gold standard for offenses versus defense in the NFL?
So do you mean by that this is the best offense, this is the best defense right now going? Because if so, or is that what you're sort of getting at?
Yeah, I mean, like, it feels like a test of many of these ideas we've been talking about all season. Is defense dead, and what does it take to stop one of these, you know, modern 2018 crazy offenses? To me, it kind of feels like, well, if anyone can do it, it should be the Bears, right?
It should be, because the Bears don't have a single defensive weakness. Like, tell me a spot where they're not above average, right? I mean, seriously, like, they've got a good pass rush. They've got two great interior defensive linemen, Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman, and some other depth players, too. They've got good, fast linebackers that can cover, and they're also running hit linebackers, too. And then they've got, like, Eddie Jackson will be the best offensive player on some team, and he plays defense for the Bears. Like, they obviously have good cornerback play, too. So, they check off pretty much every defensive box.
That's completely fair. At every level, they have incredible talent. I will say they got pretty gashed by the aforementioned Saquon Barkley. We talk about Chase Daniel and obviously the blunders he made, and we'll talk about whether or not Mitch Trubisky would have made the same mistakes and the difference that he provides. But the Giants kind of ran all over them, and I did notice that while this Bears defensive line is terrifying, they weren't really, it wasn't the best show of tackling I've seen. Okay, so while I still think that they're the best defense in the NFL, and I think you're right to say that there are no obvious weaknesses, they're not perfect. Like, if you get, you know, if the Giants put up more than 27 points a year, you're not perfect.
Sure, that's fair. In the same way that, like, as great as the Rams' offense is, like, we would concede that their offensive performance against the Lions was equally as uninspiring as the Bears were against the Giants defensively last week. They win the game 30-16, but like, that was a kind of a grinded out win. And all those typical football cliches, like going on the road, et cetera, apply here, but it wasn't their best offensive day. But I think this is a really interesting matchup for a ton of the obvious reasons. I don't know that the formula has been laid down by the Cowboys, But I think there's some things, Mina, that we can look at last Thursday and say, like, this is how a defensive-minded team or a team that has a defense you can brag about beats an offense that is already bragged about by, like, everybody, basically. And what I mean is this, is, like, the best way to beat, you know, the Rams is to keep, like, Jared Goff off the field. Like, that's great to talk about, but you have to do it. And the Cowboys had three drives last week of at least 12 plays, 12, 14, and 16. If you think about that, that's going to chew up somewhere between, like, depending on how deliberate your offense moves, you're going to be chewing up somewhere between 18 to 20 or 22 minutes of play clock there, which that's just three drives. So if you run 10 drives in the course of a game or, you know, give or take one and a half or so, like, that's a good way to do it. So I think the Bears, you know, defensively, we know that, like, it's going to be a test. But on offense, like, are they going to be as willing to do what the Cowboys did last week and as capable to do it, albeit against different opponents? But, like, I thought that was something that really played an actual role.
Yeah. I mean, and what the Cowboys did in one half. It's interesting, right? Because I've been critical of Mitch Trubisky. I've been reluctant, maybe that's the right word, like, to embrace him. Because I feel like with him, it's been a little bit of, like, two steps forward, one step back, right, over the course of this season. And but I will say, watching Chase Daniel, watching Chase Daniel, there were a lot of moments in which I was struck by, oh, right, this is the difference between having a replacement level or worse quarterback in Daniel and having a quarterback in Mitch Trubisky who is imperfect, still not the most developed deep passer by any means, but will move the chains and make plays with his legs and has really improved his accuracy on the short and intermediate levels. Like, there's a major difference, okay? Like, the Bears probably win that game. They definitely win that game with Mitch Trubisky. So I do believe that, like, if the defense is A-plus and does all the things that you described and plays to their talent level, I still think they're more talented than the Cowboys. As long as Mitch Trubisky doesn't turn the ball over excessively, which he's done in the past, I think they can stay in it, certainly against a Rams team that, frankly, hasn't looked like world beaters over the last few weeks.
It has not. And let me ask you this. Do you think the weather matters at all on Sunday night? It's supposed to be cold. They're playing in Chicago. Like, it's typically cold a lot of months of the year, but it's December. Like, there's a legitimate shot that, like, the weather is very un-LA-like. And the only reason why I ask that question is the Rams have played one game in, like, less than favorable weather this year, and they didn't lose that game. They beat the Broncos. But I'm sure you remember that game against Denver was very un-Rams. Like, I think they won 30-23 or something like that, but it wasn't. Like, it didn't feel like a typical – it was 23-20 was that game. And, like, that didn't feel like a typical Rams win. So I'm wondering if you buy into the idea that weather could be a quote-unquote factor.
I think it could change the game plan a little. I mean, last week you saw – it's funny that we talk about – like, when we talk about the Rams, we often talk about how they have such a formula, right? They only play 11. They use – play action like 3,000% of the time, but they do go off script a bit. Todd Gurley's usage varies greatly from game to game. For example, Jared Goff was horrible. Maybe that's too strong. He was not good last week, and as a result, you saw Todd had probably his worst game in like a year and a half, and Todd Gurley sort of had to step up in his stead in both the running and the passing game. And I do think it's likely that in this game, if there's bad weather and playing a Bears defensive front that gets a ton of pressure, that they're going to lean pretty heavily on him. I'm much more concerned about this Rams defense against Tariq Cohen on some of those wheel routes we saw yesterday. This line, you know, you talked about how the Bears defense doesn't have any weaknesses. Well, this Rams defense does, and it's the linebacker group because they are bad. Field. Like, they're just really, really not good.
Yeah, it's a struggle. I mean, and, like, you know, like, we've seen some bright moments, like the Samson Ebukam two-touchdown game against Kansas City might alter people's perception of the linebacker play in L.A. And, like, Corey Littleton's been a nice player for them, former special team standout, now, like, tackling machine. But you're right. Like, the Rams, that's a massive hole. And some of it's schematic, too. Like, I'm not discrediting Wade Phillips in any way, but I would just say this is, like, Wade Phillips is not one of those coaches that's going to, you know, sort of spin the dial and throw a bunch of new wrinkles at you every single week. He does what he does, and he hopes he can just execute better. And so if you know what's coming, you know, in the same way that your Seahawks used to win by playing a pretty, you know, consistent defense, you know, snap in, snap out, like the Rams are trying to do that as well. So you can argue with whether, you know, I'm a big Wade Phillips advocate, not just as a coordinator, but also on Twitter, obviously. But you kind of know what you're going to get. So if you can find ways to expose it and find ways to get those linebackers in space, you're right. Tariq Cohen, who went nuts last week against the Giants in the passing game, could do the same.
Yeah, he has a real attacking style and has benefited from the addition of, you know, I mentioned the linebackers didn't look good. One player who I thought did look very good, or at least stood out to me, was Dante Fowler, right? And that's something that they've lacked, an edge rush. So he, if he can become that piece for them that's been missing for arguably two seasons, I think that would be huge. The other thing about the Rams defense that makes me a little bit more optimistic is while the linebacker group looked really, really bad, I thought the secondary looked significantly better. They've looked significantly better. Marcus Peters is no longer suffering from whatever he was, whether that was, you know, it might have been a little bit tied to his calf injury early in the season, but he can cover now. That helps. Aqib Talib's back.
Sure, yep.
So it doesn't feel like that, you know, the DBs are being exploited to the same degree that they were before, which could be huge down the stretch. I picked the Rams in this game field, but I'm not feeling great about it. I picked them mostly because of the uncertainty around Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, that's how I'm leaning too, is I'm picking the Rams because they, you know, the possibility of facing a backup quarterback. And I know that no NFL team really talks about, like, hey, you know, home field advantage and thinking 3 weeks ahead, but I got to imagine the Rams players are smart enough to realize that the door was reopened last Thursday night when the Saints lost.
Yeah.
And like, there's so much at stake. And I personally feel like the NFC Championship could be decided by week 17 of the NFL season. Like, I really like the Rams in LA, and I really like the Saints in New Orleans. So I think there's a lot of motivation for them to slam the door shut on giving any life back to the Saints at some point over the next month.
And you got to think, they're going to, after what happened last year, I don't know if you remember, the Rams kind of, they sat a bunch of their starters in the last game of the season, and then came out a bit flat the first playoff game. I kind of wonder if they're going to, you know, go the opposite route this year as a result of that, and if McVay got a little bit burnt by that approach. All right, one more game I want to talk about. It's a really, really good game.
Vikings at Seahawks.
So Seahawks right now are very well positioned to make it to the playoffs. It depends on what model you look at. It's anywhere from like 70 to 90%, which seems a little bit high. Even if they lose this game, and they still beat their divisional opponents in the remaining games. But if they win this game, you know, good night, right? The five seed is basically theirs. I want to start by asking you about the Vikings, though, Field, because I think that the defense has rounded into form. You know, at the beginning of the season, they were really, really confusingly bad, and then started to look more like themselves. And on this podcast, I've talked a lot about why that is. But the offense is really inconsistent week to week. And I guess I wanted to ask you, like, why do you think that they're so unreliable? Like, is it because of Cousins? Is it because of the line? Is it because of the play calling? What would you blame the Vikings' inconsistency on?
Well, let me start here. It's almost like I wish that the Vikings could, or that the Seahawks would donate some of their rushing attempts to the Vikings. Because the Vikings are, like, mystifyingly reliant upon the passing game, and the Seahawks are dedicated to the running game, like there's something at stake if they don't run the football, you know? Like, and I'm sure that's not news to you.
No, I love that. I like
you, obviously.
I like that idea, though. It's like the movie Speed, where if the rushing attempts go below 60% versus the pass, the bus blows up or whatever. That is literally
how Brian Schottenheimer. That's
amazing. Good
reference.
That's how Brian Schottenheimer.
Is that Tom Cruise?
Speed was Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
Okay, Keanu Reeves. Yeah. That's a distant movie in our past.
Speed 2 was my first date. Cruise Control. All right.
Okay. Of course. So the back to the Vikings offense. Like, I honestly think that a lot of it can be attributed to the lack of offensive line production. And they've been a little bit banged up, but they've had players that, like, have underperformed relative to previous years. The only guy that I trust on their offensive line every single week is Pat Elflein, their center, who has played, like, you know, has been a pretty much a plug and play starter for them throughout much of his NFL career. But, like, I don't know that I feel really good about the offensive line as a whole. I would say that there are a few other things here that are worth noting, is that the Like the run pass thing is real. Like I'm convinced of it. I don't know why they don't run the football more. Like they've got this really good duo of running backs in Dalvin Cook and Latavius Murray that should be able to set the tone. They have amazing wide receivers, but again, like they don't have, it's not perfect 1-11, but like you like if you look at each one of their groups individually, you'd say for the most part, I'm in on them. But the offensive line has given Kirk Cousins very little time and space. So I think that more, you know, along with the lack of running game output right now are the two things that I look towards and I'm like, all right, what's going on here? And I don't think Mike Zimmer has been that, like he's been sort of extroverted in his thoughts, right? You know, you ask him about like, we don't run like the damn football enough, you know? And like there's something to that. He's obviously watching every single snap closely and knows what he would like to see. And he's a defensive minded, hands off the offense coach, but he probably knows enough to realize that like, if you are as predictable as they kind of feel like they are right now, that's not going to be good enough.
And this is one of those teams that we were talking about earlier with the defensive-minded coach, head coach, and then the young hotshot, right, on offense in John DeFilippo, who's been named. I was talking about earlier about Matt LaFleur. Flips come up a lot as a head coaching candidate because, again, there's so much appetite for these young play callers who come from, you know, the Doug Peterson or Andy Reid coaching trees or Shanahan trees. But I wasn't very impressed last week. I've been impressed in the past. I think that they do a lot of fun, creative things, and they certainly have the weaponry to do so. But against New England, I was perplexed for the reasons you just described. They were having so much success running the ball in the first half. Dalvin Cook broke off those two massive runs at the end of the half, and he was just getting wide every time very easily against New England. They really couldn't contain the edge against him. And then I think he carried the ball four times in the second half.
Like, so, if I told you he had 17 total touches last week, you'd be like, I'm good with that. And then you see that it's 8 catches for 22 yards, much less. It's like, you know, bizarre. Like, you can't have that kind of inefficiency from Dalvin Cook, who's a good player. And the game was not even close to out of reach. I think it was 17-10, if not 10-10. It might have been tied at halftime.
Yep, it was.
That game, which, like, it looked like it was going to get out of reach quickly, and then it didn't. It was very surprising. So something is like, it's fishy right now is what I would say with the Vikings. Like there's no harmony right now. Yeah. And you're right, Mina. Like, you know,
conspiracy.
John DeFilippo is widely, he's regarded as you mentioned, like he's a young offensive mind that people are talking about. Like, and I don't know that his resume has gotten decidedly better this year compared to where it was last year.
Well, nobody affiliated with that. Well, actually, I think Frank Reich maybe. But on the other side of the ball, you've got an offensive coordinator who's not very highly regarded and is certainly not seen as a head coaching candidate. That would be Brian Schottenheimer. Listen, I've been very guilty of criticizing Schottenheimer, perhaps unkindly, on the Twitters. But credit where credit's due. Well, actually, you know what? No, let's throw that into question. Do you think any credit's due, or do you think this is just Russell Wilson? I mean, you saw. I'm sure you saw the stat line. I think at one point early in the Seahawks, again, Niners game, so take that with a grain of salt, he had thrown like 4 passes and had 3 touchdowns. Something absurd. But
something ridiculous.
Just ridiculous. And his efficiency numbers in the red zone this year, by the way, are bonkers. Absolutely bonkers. Do you think that's just Russell Wilson being Russell Wilson, or do you think the Seahawks offense and the play calling and sort of the balance that they've established deserves some credit?
Yeah, it's weird because every time I think I'm going to make a smart point about the Seahawks, I remember my audience, right? And that's you, and you know the Seahawks better than the Seahawks know themselves. But if there's an offensive coach that's inspired me this year, it's probably Mike Solari, right? Like, this is an offensive line that couldn't get out of its own way last year. And now you've got an offensive line that maybe is still imperfect, but at least you're like, I don't know. I wonder if Russell Wilson, like during training camp, was like scrambling away from clean pockets because he didn't know what one looked like. You know what I'm saying? Like it's so atypical from the Seahawks, but it's been much better along the offensive line. And some of that I think is like attitude and technique, and they've gotten much better production for some guys that have been up and down. But like, I'm like them and the Colts are the two teams that I think are a year or two ahead of the plan, like even of their own plan, which has been so awesome to watch. And you know, certainly a lot of it traces back to Russell Wilson, but there's more to it than just Russell Wilson, and because it's like the defense numerically I think is largely fine, But I don't look at this defense in the same vein that we obviously did previous. I mean, obvious again, stating the obvious to a bunch of Seahawks fans. But like the defense has been better than I thought, but not amazing.
Yes.
The offense has been better than I thought, and at times amazing. But like, there's a lot of things that have gone right. And I know this is lame, but like, they are legitimately dynamic and special teams, which you're talking about. Like, there can be games where that's
lame.
150 yards of total yardage. Yeah,
music
well,
my,
you know,
music
some people
to
don't
my ears.
Think the kicking game. Yeah, some people don't believe in it. So, but they have been awesome in special teams, and that stuff really matters.
Well, listen, when people ask me who are the year, what do you expect out of the Seahawks? I said 8-8. I said I'd like to see some young players, you know, flash and develop, and because they're going to get more time. And then people say, well, you know, what do you think about, you've got guys saying they're going to be the worst team in the division, they're going to have the first draft pick. And I said, no way. And here's why. They've got Russell Wilson on offense and Bobby Wagner on defense. Like, you know, and I think that's why, if I had to explain, give one explanation for why they're still in it and why they're pretty good and why they've outperformed expectations on both sides, I think that's it, quite frankly. I mean, there's more to it, obviously, but Bobby Wagner is one of the best defensive players in the NFL.
I think we better not take him for granted. We really better not, because
he's incredible.
I think if you saw Bobby Wagner, you'd think to yourself, like, he's so big and imposing that, like, he's probably one of those linebackers that just runs around and, like, makes you pay in the running game and is the kind of player that, like, even Leonard Fournette would not enjoy meeting in the hole. But at the same time, the dude covers grounds like one
it's
of those 6'2", 220-pound linebackers that, like, he gets drafted to cover running backs. He's ridiculous.
Did you see he ran that 98-yard touchdown return? I mean, he was...
I got tired watching that. Yeah.
I don't know if you follow. I love Brian Baldinger's Baldy's breakdowns, and he did one of Wagner after that game, and you could hear the emotion in his voice because he was so... I mean, it is... He is just... He filled the entire stat sheet in this game. It's remarkable. He literally does everything you want as a linebacker. And one interesting thing in this game was they blitzed him more than usual. I don't know if that's something you can do against other teams, but it might be something to look out for in this Viking game. I'll just wrap up by saying this Seahawks defense, I don't think it's fool's gold, but I do think when you look at a lot of the underlying metrics, they're not as good as their results. Now, Field, you're pretty close to the New England franchise. You know that sometimes defenses are built a certain kind of way, which is, you know, the bend don't break. They're good at certain things. They get turnovers. They play smart, disciplined football. And so I think if the offense is able to maintain this level of production, the defense doesn't have to be great. They don't have to be the 2013 defense. But there's reason to believe that you might expect some regression against better teams.
That's fair, Mina. But one thing that's, like, not talked about nearly enough, although I've seen it be brought up a little bit over the past day or so, in actually respect to the Patriots, is, like, the most important thing that a defensive player can do is tackle.
Yeah.
And the Patriots tackle really well. And, like, the Seahawks are a team that's fast and physical and disciplined enough, like, they're technique-driven defensively, that, like, tackling well can go a long way. You know, there's only so much you can control on Sundays as a coach. But Monday through Saturday or Monday through Friday, like, I'm not sure there's nearly enough of an emphasis put on tackling. And I know, again, that's, like, stating the obvious, but I, like, in a league where we see really poor tackling consistently, that's something that can make a quantifiable difference.
Yeah, there was a lot of bad tackling in this Niners game. I mean, when Nick Mullins puts up 400 yards, that's what's going to happen. Throwing Dante Pettis in. But, and perhaps this is something that jumped out because I was watching all those Bobby Wagner videos near the goal line, the tackling did seem to tighten up in the red zone, and they've been better there all season. So I think it's certainly something that this defense that Pete Carroll emphasizes, and it's a reason to be somewhat confident in this team going forward. All right. Well, as always,
I agree.
But before I finish, actually, who do you think is going to win this game?
I think the Seahawks do it at home. I know that, like, the home
thing
hasn't
been. Why are you sighing? What's that tone in your voice?
No, sorry. I just don't want to. I don't want you to think that, like, I'm coming on your show and simply catering to your Seahawks, your desire to see the Seahawks win. I just think that although it hasn't been as, like, I don't know that they're as dominant as home as they were for all those, you know, for whatever that number of years was. Like, I think they find a way. And I think it's like a kind of, I don't want to say ugly, because ugly is sort of a subjective measure of football, but like a 24-20 type game would be my guess.
First of all, thank you. You know, gritty defensive games. We're body positive here on the Mina Kimes Show.
That's
we,
right.
We like,
that's right.
We like thick football. All right. As always, we end with our final segment.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Still not getting paid for this. All right, Field. First question. If you were starting your own football team and you could draw three people from ESPN, who would be your GM, who would be your coach, and who would be your mascot?
Wow, great question there. My GM, I think I would go with Matt Bowen as my GM, who is really, really sharp and does a great job with the film analysis. And, you know, he's a guy that doesn't have a lot of ego to him, doesn't like pump his own, you know, toot his own horn, pump his own chest or whatever, pound his own chest. Matt Bowen, just like take time and listen to what he has to say. I'm going to go with a co-coach because they're brothers. So the Hasselbeck brothers. I work more with Tim than I do with Matt on set, but Tim Hasselbeck's breakdowns are phenomenal. They're really worth your time if you have the chance to watch it. And then my mascot. Randy Scott, because I've long believed that Randy is one of the funniest people that nobody. Oh, man. But how about Stugott? Stugott would be perfect as my mascot.
Yeah.
I'm fence sitting right now. I'll go with Stugott to give him some love because he entered the segment.
That's tough. That's a tough one. What is a football question? What was your biggest misconception coming into this season? Like, what's one thing you really got wrong?
One thing that I got really wrong was I thought that Patrick Mahomes would have more up and down moments than he has. I thought that, like, I had drawn a comparison to a Phillip Rivers season where he threw for, like, 38 touchdowns and like, 21 interceptions. I thought there might be more peaks and valleys for Patrick Mahomes, and I've been wrong. He's been, like, he's my favorite player to watch right now. He's my favorite player in the NFL, as a matter of fact.
He's your favorite player in the NFL? Wow.
I love watching him.
They asked us that on one of those roundtables, and I was really tempted to say him. And I felt like this was too football hipster, but I went with Aaron Donald instead. I don't know. Maybe
I went with Taysom Hill, which was sort of football hipster too.
The most football hipster. Okay. Would you rather get a massive back tattoo, but you can choose what it is, or barbed wire on both biceps?
Ooh, probably a massive back tattoo
because
I feel like you get way more creative, and I'll field suggestions of what it should be. I'm leaning towards like what am I thinking? Right, what would be perfect?
For you?
I don't know. Probably like it's got to be monogram. Whatever it is, it's got to be monogram. That's all I know.
Well, I was thinking like that script that they use. You could do the Yater's gonna Yate across your back.
Ooh, I like that. I like where your head's at, Mina. My future wife may not like that, but I'll talk to her tonight.
That's the kind of tattoo when you go into prison, it really sends a message. you have a very unusual name. It's your name, right? It's your given name. Yes, not a nickname?
It is my given name, yep.
Okay, question is, did you like it as a kid?
I thought there were some growing pains with my name. I have like this very distinct memory of a time when so I'm one of three. I'm the middle child. We went to pick up my brother, and my mom got out of the car to like talk to one of the teachers, whoever it was. And before my brother got into the car, my sister, one of my brother's classmates who was giving me flack for my name, and my sister, who is like has been unbelievable. Like she's always been very like self assured and has like a great independence about her. Basically, like barked down this guy's throat and was like, "Nobody." Mind you, she's like six. And she's like, "Nobody talks to my brother like that." And this kid sort of cowered in a way that is almost like made for TV. But I love it now. I mean, I always can say like, hey, it's hard to forget, right? And it plays well in our profession. So there's a lot of segment ideas that I picked around, like field notes,
so
field pass, thoughts
in
the field, et cetera.
Yes. Really good for wedding hashtags, too. I know you're getting married soon. So that's an easy one for sure. All right. As always, last question comes from Lenny, my dog. I'm going to read it in his voice to honor his wishes. Listen, I have no control over these questions, so really would like to ask. Field, I have enjoyed your various modeling shoots, the advertorials you post on Instagram. I just wanted to ask, how are you planning on celebrating your 21st birthday?
Lenny, thanks for the question.
That's a nice
long-time
one from
fan
him.
Of yours
Rare.
As well.
Much nicer
than
usual.
That was a great
usual.
One. I know, seriously. Very, very glad to finally be in your presence, albeit electronically or over the phone.
He had another question, birthday. Which was a lot ruder, which was he wanted to know if you had lower teeth, but this is, he went with this one.
I have one that's a little bit out of place, but I do have lower teeth. That's part of the reason why I don't show them that much. My mom thinks I need to get braces again. My 21st birthday, I'll probably, do something super cheesy. I'll probably go to Dave and Buster's, because I'm that guy.
I love Dave and Buster's.
Go play some skee ball and, not do anything that is, only permissible when you were 21 years or older. That's... like I'm the no fun zone apparently. Yeah. No, I don't know. It's gonna be lit though. So whatever my 21st birthday entails, it's gonna be amazing.
You're gonna have your very first beer. Have you seen the iconic Marshawn Lynch interview with Kenny Mayne where he goes to Dave and Buster's?
I have, yes, I have, and that's amazing. And I love both of those people independently. And I love like the fact that like whenever they get together, like I'd watch like. I don't know, like Around the Horn
anything.
Or Highly Questionable with those two filling in.
Anything. And the greatest piece of content ESPN has ever put out. This is the second greatest piece of content ESPN has ever put out. Field, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. Look forward to having you back when you turn 21.